Look, Matt.
Where?
Oh, I see.
Wow. Oh, my.
Bowen, look over there.
Wow, is that Ooh. Culture?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong. Las Culturistas calling.
And we've got the champs out. What is
just
what
celebrating
are you,
over here?
What's in that little flute?
Oh, the moe, honey.
The moe.
We're breaking a tiny moe that I was gifted. I don't know from whom. I can't remember. Can't recall. But it's here for good occasions, and
Ooh,
I believe this is
dangerous.
One of them.
This is mm-hmm. absolutely an occasion to break out the moe, but it's dangerous for you to really not be able to trace it back to the source.
You're right. This could be from one of my enemies.
It could be. It could
and
be.
And then what?
And then what? I don't think you have very many enemies, Matt Rogers.
You know what's weird? I was thinking about this the other day, because I'm reading this book that our guest wrote. The undercurrents of it are like, you know, wanting to be likable, like working in a position where you have to sort of have a degree of likability. And I was like, I wonder if people truly like me.
Oh, my goodness.
I was actually, this kind of ran through my head.
This is an impossible question to answer.
And then I get
yourself.
To the end of the book and sort of the author of said book and our guest today sort of arrives at the same conclusion. And I sort of breathed a sigh of recognition, relief at all.
That's usually Latin to refer to people, but mm-hmm. I think in this case we've got Jarrett saying yes. We just have to acknowledge Jarrett Keller is in the chat, is in the Zoom, and I think he's going to chime in every now and then with some commentary, and we welcome that.
I hope so. He's already a character in the episode.
He's a character in the episode. We've introduced him into the world. Matt, I'm so excited about our guest.
This is actually, do you remember when we started this podcast? And pretty much for the past 5 years, we've kept it going, and it's always been sort of like, you know, our little stupid baby. And now all of a
the
sudden.
Podcast.
Yeah. Because I don't think we have another stupid baby unless.
No.
So all of a sudden, sort of here we are and our guest is on. And I got to break out the moe and say, not for nothing, but what the hell?
What the hell?
What the hell?
She's first and foremost a Las Culturistas Culture Award nominee.
I actually was going to say this is her greatest achievement. That she gets nominated in the category of Best Asker.
Best Asker. I feel like she's the front runner.
Especially after coming on the show. I mean, can you imagine if she were to be snubbed at the last second? That would just be cruel.
That would be very cruel. She just crossed her fingers. And
She's got other achievements though under her belt, I'd say.
I would say so. I mean, is it an exercise in, not futility, but in sort of communicating what people already know if we run through the credits, or should we just,
you know,
Letterman
says my next guest truly needs
no introduction.
And I feel like this is like the epitome of that. But that being said, for our readers that might be living under a rock, to just throw another expression out there,
I think this is the wrap it up. She's giving us the wrap it up.
It's shut up but keep going.
It's universal.
It's on brand.
Shut up and keep going. This is her.
Let's just say it's truly surreal because I think that outside of my parents growing up, this is the person I saw the most in my home every single day. We were a Today Show household. Were you guys a Today Show household?
We were a Today Show household. Absolutely. Everything was 30 Rock at my house.
It
was
it's still to this day.
I know.
Look
isn't
at you,
it,
you company man. You're so
titter. Yeah, whatever. You know, I worship at the altar of one erstwhile head of NBC, Mr. Jeff Zucker.
Who is really a good character in this book as
Great
well.
Character in this book. I was loving every...
Shakespearean.
And, I mean, we'll get into it. There's a lot that happens just in the... I mean, can we talk about this?
Let's just say about the book, there's a lot that happens.
When was the last time you tore through a 500-pager?
Okay, I'll tell you honestly... The day before I read this book, I read this book, Not All Diamonds and Rosé, which is an oral history of the Real Housewives franchise. So it was merely 12 or 14 hours before I tore through this 500 plus pager that I got through this. Yes, 500 plus pager, also a page turner. I wouldn't say not as much of an achievement as going there by our guest.
Right.
But a great read nonetheless that I endorse.
I think this is the ideal reading experience for me because I'm clutching the galley in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 500 pager. The average page count per chapter. Oh, well, no, I'll say the number of chapters.
Love this about it.
99 chapters. So do the math. You're averaging out about 5 pages per chapter. And mm-hmm. let me tell you.
Tastes.
Authors take note.
Literally. I was like, they all need to be like this.
Well, this is someone who knows how people consume information.
And how to tell stories.
And I think she's done it with aplomb and elan.
I want to talk to her.
Oh, well, let's talk to her. Well, before we get going, please check her out if you're in New York, Boston, Dallas, Nashville, Atlanta, Los Angeles, San Francisco. Please check her out on her Going There book tour. She's got wonderful special guests and truly span all industries and types of people. It really is unmissable wherever you live in
different creeds, colors, nationality, shape, sizes, all different kinds of people guest on this book tour.
She was rehearsing for it this morning, and we're so excited to have her. So everyone, please welcome into your ears
Katie Couric. Craziness.
Hi guys, I'm so excited. Thank you very much for having me. You've just lowered my demographic by about 30 years, so I really appreciate
it. So that's what it is. We're just a tool to you, aren't we?
You are basically, Matt. I'm using you for your following. No, I'm really excited to be here.
It's our honor and pleasure. Honestly, like when we heard that you wanted to do this, we were like, oh my God. And then I really... In reading the book, it's just so good. Like, really, congratulations on it.
Aw, thank you. Did you both really read the book?
Yes!
Page after page, the whole thing.
Thank you. First of all, thank you so much for reading it, because that's a commitment. And I worked really hard on it over 3 years, and I think it shows all the research I had to do, because I have a good memory, but not that good. So I just want to say thank you. I'm really grateful that you took the time to read it. And I can't wait to hear what you thought or what questions you have or what it made you think about, because it is a lot. I mean, it's very expansive and it covers a lot of different things.
Yes.
And I think it's kind of sneaks in a lot of issues that I think people might be surprised to read about. I don't think they know they're reading about issues per se.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think through my 40-year career or whatever, my 64-year-old life, it spans a lot of big societal changes and kind of it's perfect for the Culturistas, because it really talks about culture, right?
Yes. Yeah.
100%. Can you immediately tell in doing press for this which people have read the book and which people haven't?
Yes, of course. Well, sometimes it also depends on the venue. You know, some of these interviews just don't allow you to kind of talk about anything in depth. I really enjoyed doing an interview with Terry Gross the other day from Fresh Air. I felt like Terry read it and was really interested in all the things that I was interested in when I was writing it, instead of kind of the garbage, tabloidy, stupid stuff that has been completely distorted, blown out of proportion, and willfully misrepresents what this book is all about. It's been very strange, honestly.
I've been really pissed off about it for you.
Isn't it? Well, having read the book.
Yes.
And then, but prior to that, having possibly seen some of the junk that's been put out there, were you like, wait, what? And were you expecting the book to be very different given some of the crap that's been circulating?
No, considering the sources of the trash, it was very like, I will take this with the biggest rock of salt. You know, like, I mean, if the Post is writing about it.
When I saw New York Post, I was like, oh, they're using the word misogynist to describe Katie Couric. That's the most hilarious thing I've ever heard in my life. Tell me more. Just kidding. Tell me nothing. It was just, but what I've been really sort of disappointed by is, like, I was watching, as I want to do, I was watching Watch What Happens Live the other night. And they made the gross mistake, I think, in programming and just in general of having Meghan McCain and Essie Cupp
on. Oh my God.
And they had them on a Wednesday night, first of all, which is Beverly Hills night. And it's like, why don't we have Kyle Richards? It's like, there's a lot of eyes on it. So of course they get the spot. I don't know why. But he asked them about your book And S.E. turns to Megan and goes, well, we both hate it. And you can tell.
Megan says we both hate it.
And she just kind of says, like, why would you tear down other women? Like, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just like, they're just having this, like, this discussion that says to me, obviously they have not read the book, because had Meghan McCain read the book, she, out of all people, would recognize that you guys have so much in common because of the loss that you guys have both experienced, because of what you've had to go through, so that all she can sit there and say is, well, I think it's pathetic that she trashed other women. I'm like, that's not how we are. After reading the book, it just really disappointed me even more, because that's just not the point.
Well, it's so clear. And stop holding up the Real Housewives book, Matt, when you talk about my book.
I'm throwing it around across the room.
But I think it's so clear that they haven't read the book. And it's honestly kind of weird and irresponsible and really creepy for them to make these big pronouncements when they haven't read the book. And they're taking bits and pieces from... Well, doesn't Meghan McCain work for the Daily Mail now?
I don't know what she does anymore.
I think she does. Yeah, she works for the Daily Mail, which, you know, it's just sort of crazy. It's grossly irresponsible of them. And listen, I'd be happy to have them talk about the book if they read the book and understood the totality of it. But I think they're trying to be in my draft a little bit.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And get, you know... Some people, I think, are trying to get attention by talking about my book if they are just thirsty in general.
Yeah.
It's so strange that you, of all people, would not be inured to all of the weird fucking stuff that, like, people will start to manufacture around, like, you as a person in terms of you in your output. Like, this is something that's happened to you your whole career, I would say.
You mean in terms of...
Just people, like... Really projecting all this stuff onto you.
I think it's so funny. It's so ironic, and not in a good way, that my prologue talked about trying to write a book that showed my multidimensionality, if you will, that people sort of put women particularly in this box. And yet it's sort of happening again.
Yes.
There, I talk all about, you know, I think one of my favorite chapters was the booking wars, because
I loved it.
I mean, didn't that sound like a made for TV series, right?
Yeah.
And I think that I had so much fun writing it. Some of the stuff is very cheeky. You know, my sense of humor, I hope, comes through. And I laugh about the booking war, and I laugh about the booking wars, and I laugh about kind of them pitting women against each other. And of course, you know, we were the ones that were expected to secure the big gets. But I also talk about how women are portrayed in the press of, you know, these cat fights is just catnip for the press. And here you go. It's very meta seeing this actually play out by people who haven't even read the book. You know, the big thing I don't trash any women. Hello.
You certainly did not.
You know, and the only thing I said, which I think was incredibly self-aware, and any of these people in these professions would admit, that once in a while I felt territorial about my turf.
Right.
Right. And there are turf wars all the time. There were then, there are now, that go on in television. I know that. But I don't think anyone wants to admit that, oh, yeah, sometimes they feel insecure and territorial. And I'm like, yeah, I feel that. I felt that way sometimes.
Why wouldn't
I'm admitting
you?
It. I'm calling myself out on it. So, like, fuck off.
Yeah.
Right.
It seems like it's like if a man had written, and not to be like, when it's a man and da da da, like, and like, you know, repeat some like talking head, but it really feels like if a man had written this book and like owned up to a lot of this stuff and was willing to talk about and engage in a lot of this stuff, people would be like, it's nice to hear it like discussed in this way, and what a thoughtful recollection on the times. and like with you, it seems like it's this bizarre thing where even women in media are like, "Well, I didn't know she was a mean girl," which came out of Sunny Hostin's mouth the other day on The View. I was like, are you kidding me?
Wow, maybe I shouldn't do that show.
Well, there. You want to tell you something?
Despite the fact
that they keep talking about how excited they are to have you, but they are, you're certainly quite a topic on Hot Topics.
And do you think they've read the book? Because that's the thing.
I don't know.
I don't think I should go. I don't think I should talk about this book to people who haven't read it.
That seems sensible.
Yeah.
It really does, because it will only be misunderstood. Only. I mean, because I'm holding up the spine of this. This is tome thickness, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm saying this is a big, long, nuanced and detailed book, and
she's thick. She's meaty, thick. She's thick, she's filled with it.
There's no way that people are going to be able to distill this down to, like, especially on a television show. There's no way that they're going to, like, really nail what you're trying to say. And it is interesting what Matt just said. Like, there is no way that I think this is your point in the Booking Wars chapter, right? Like, the men thought that the booking stuff was beneath them because they had the luxury of thinking that. Meanwhile, all of the sort of logistical, emotional labor of getting these interviews was placed on specific teams, gendered in a specific way. And then if any male newscaster were to write this book, I don't know that this book would exist, because I don't think these men are doing the soul searching that, like, we demand women in media to go through.
Well, I think we're asking everyone to do it. I think I hate to say that many of these men sort of aren't in touch. Listen, this is a very different kind of book. You know, a lot of journalists say, oh, these are the stories I covered, this was something that happened. Like, and not to be all go all Bette Midler on Beaches on you guys, but it is very deep. I mean, it is like digging deep into a lot of things. It's asking myself questions, asking societal questions, you know, kind of trying to come to terms with my family history, trying to help my daughters understand my late husband, their dad's passion for the Civil War in the 90s and how it doesn't square. And, you know, people are so black and white, good, bad. And someone sent me a quote by a guy who, the director of Grey Gardens, and its tyranny is the deliberate removal of nuance.
Yeah.
And I thought that rang really true for me, because no one can seem to have these conversations in any kind of sophisticated or intelligent way. They have to, it's so reductive and so sort of extreme one way or another. And that's why it disappoints me, but makes me feel sad for people who can't actually have a nuanced conversation or appreciate nuance. I think it's a real, it's a sad commentary on our current culture, and we're being very serious here, boys.
What I think is, like, also, it's like journalists know that way that news is consumed, and so it doesn't encourage them to look for nuance either. It almost feels like when you watch some of these shows, when they have 5 minutes, maybe, to discuss a given topic, it's like a race to the black and white. You know what I mean? It's sort of like a, let me convince you how I'm correct and why this thing that I'm saying is the correct talking point. And it is very sort of, you know, there's no time for the gray area. There's no time for the exploration, because people, I think they think, and maybe they're right, people get bored.
I think we're so used to, and I've used this a lot, but this engagement through enragement. You know, I think it's this intersection of psychology and technology that we're seeing play out in the modern media landscape. You know, you got to get a rise. I mean, this is not a big new newsflash or anything, but that's, you know, this is how the machine keeps churning, right? This is how the rabbit hole keeps being followed down. Yeah. And I think all these kind of things that hit you emotionally, those are the things that keep you engaged and keep you on these platforms or keep you watching. Mm-hmm. This almost this rage porn in a weird way.
But meanwhile, you come from this school of journalism where you say this in the book, like, you didn't ever want to expose any sort of partisan leaning or skew in your line of questioning. Like, anytime, I think you, like, that is your style. That is the Katie Couric style. Like, I feel like you would never get some ideological thing from your point of view out too much, even if it was interviewing Sarah Palin or even if it was interviewing George Bush Sr.
Yeah,
you know,
like, I did try to do that. I mean, I think that people watching the Today Show sensed I was probably more on the progressive side, you know, when I mm-hmm. would ask the governor of Wyoming about conversion therapy mm-hmm. and the kind of, you know, environment that creates for people who are gay, or, you know, questions along those lines when I really challenged David Duke about comments he's made about, you know, Jews belong in the ash bin of society or whatever he said. I think by virtue of just being a working woman, mm-hmm. you know, I think there are some assumptions might have been made about me. But I did try throughout most of my career to really be down the middle and to yeah. challenge both sides. But then, of course, the Trump administration, I think, ushered in this new era of, you know, it's become hackneyed to say it's not left, right, it's right, wrong. But I do think it's come to this.
Yeah.
And so it would be very hard to be the kind of journalist that I was in this current day and age, you know? Mm-hmm.
Sure. I think with what you were saying earlier about this emotionality to news, I think that's what you were doing on the Today Show. I'm jumping around a little bit, but I feel like on Today, the reason why you helped make it the number one daytime news show was that people were emotionally connected to like America's First Family.
Yeah, I write about that. You know, that was a little exaggerated, I think, to create these parasocial relationships that viewers have with people they don't even know.
Right.
You know, I think we all had a good relationship, but I think that they exploited that mm-hmm. as well, you know, in terms of how they wanted to promote the show. You know, I think people gravitated toward me early on because I was a different animal. I wasn't kind of the prototypical news anchor.
Mm-hmm.
I looked a little different. I acted a little different. I was a little more unpolished. And I think people gravitated to that authenticity a little bit at the beginning. And I think I was pretty comfortable showing different aspects of my personality. I wasn't particularly buttoned up. I like to have fun or do say something funny or cheeky.
Mm-hmm.
And then I could do really serious things as well. But, you know, it's hard to remember, but back in 1991, I was a whole different kettle of fish uh-huh. in terms of what people would expect in a female anchor person, lady, mm-hmm. whatever.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's kind of interesting to see that now the number one daytime personality is probably Kelly Clarkson, who like everyone in America fell in love with. And it's like, we remember that. And so she's like nostalgic, but also current. And she's really not a journalist at all. She's a singer.
Well, I feel like, well, that's more of a talk show. Like that is very different.
Pure
different format, yeah, than the Today Show, which
they had to go interview Dr. Jill Biden, though. I mean, like, sometimes I'm surprised how much the crossover there is, especially as we see Donald Trump become president. You know
yeah.
what I mean? It almost
yeah.
feels like all
yeah.
these things that had different boxes a long time ago, those boxes are sort of like all now turned over on the floor and everything's kind of mixing.
And I think you're right, though. I think Kelly is sort of very comfortable in her own skin. She kind of is who she is. She doesn't put on airs.
Right.
And I think people appreciate that.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, it's in reading the book, like I think I read about 15 times over the sentence swamp ass. And I was just like, thank God. Now you've arrived at the time where you can finally discuss the moments where you had swamp ass, like the vomiting.
My daughter Ellie used that expression once when she called me. She was working in a writer's room and they made her go to like 5 different restaurants for their lunches. And it was 104 or something in the valley. And she called me like one wanted sushi, one wanted barbecue, one wanted what's that place that it's a chain and
Din Tai Fung. I don't know.
Mendocino Farms?
No, it's in Santa Monica. You guys know what I'm talking about. I always forget the name. Huh? what kind of food is like American cuisine. It's like all kinds of, you know,
chilies. Shoot.
No, it's kind of like an upscale chilies. Something. Huh?
Ruby Tuesdays.
Not Ruby Tuesdays. It's like that. It's
Fridays? TGI Fridays?
No, not TGI Fridays. It's it's on Santa Monica. It's
Swingers.
No, keep guessing, you guys. It's like, and I think they have like cheese. Oh, Cheesecake Factory!
Cheesecake Factory. That's
wow.
I walk in there and everyone actually bows down. I'm the prince of Cheesecake Factory.
Okay, sorry. Anyway, one guy wanted her to go to Cheesecake Factory, and he's always like, "I want more bread." Anyway, she would call me, and she would be like, "Mom, it is 104 in the valley. I've gone to like, you know, 12 different restaurants for these dudes."
Yeah,
and I have the worst case of swamp ass.
Swamp
ass. I was like, that is so funny. I've got to use that at some point. And ergo, Matt, swamp ass.
Swamp ass is in the book.
It makes an appearance.
You talk about squeezing your breast milk across a room. You're vomiting after being in an F-16. Like, it goes there. And I wonder, like, if 10
is
years
that
ago,
weird?
20
I mean,
years...
I,
no!
No!
We love
I
it.
I was thinking about it, you guys. I was thinking about, I wrote a book as if I was with, like, really fun, smart people sitting in a room drinking wine, and yeah. I was telling my story.
Good. That's all we want when we pick up the book. I mean, it doesn't feel editorialized at all.
No, because this is the takeaway, and I think this is probably explaining the reaction a little bit, is that it's much more honest than I expected, Katie.
Same.
And like, and it's funny. Like, we were just rattling off jokes, like hard jokes in the book. Like, I think you are taking a hammer to like this whole image that you've cultivated your whole career, and I feel like that's intentional. Is that fair to say?
Well, first of all, I don't think I cultivated an image.
Okay.
I mean, no, and I'm not like smacking you down or whatever. What do you call it?
I'm going to later.
Clap
back.
No. But I, you know, listen. I think the point of the book is,
yeah,
like we all are so much more than the image people.
Right.
People project upon us, or even the image that we project. And I just am, you know, I have a lot of different sides. So I don't think I automatically destroyed the image, Bowen. I think I just tried to expand who I was and let people kind of get to know me on a much deeper level, a much more expansive level. And a level, I mean, like, I really let people in. I let them in about, you know, what was happening at the worst moment of my life when my husband was diagnosed with cancer in really a lot of detail.
Yeah.
I am very honest about, like, how hard it was for me to be at CBS and what I believe was a hostile work environment that I walked into. And our purposes were not aligned in any way.
Right.
And I was sort of brought in there to do something that only Les Moonves apparently wanted me to do. Mm. And, you know, I'm very honest about, you know, my sister and my parents and, you know, great moments of accomplishment that I'm really proud of and moments that, like, I sucked at and what that was like what it really felt like inside to go through it all. And so I feel like I didn't want to like change the image people had. I just wanted them to get to know me better.
Yeah. Was there any difficulty process-wise in terms of like putting it down on paper, like really reconceptualizing all of these difficult memories into this like memoir form?
Not really, you know. It was really helpful, actually. You know, I think everybody has delayed grief, you know, and I think writing about Jay, you know, first of all, it was really fun to write about how we met.
Yeah, I love that. You're a top, by the way. Does anyone ever told you you're a top?
Katie Kirk's the top.
What's that mean?
Well, so in gay sexual relations, there's
a
top.
Oh, is that what you mean? Yeah.
And there's a bottom. You are a top, I would say. You know what you want and you go for it.
And you go for it.
And
I'm very assertive and I'm very intentional.
That's top behavior.
Okay. Top behavior. All right. Well, good. Thank you for clarifying.
You can tell people that. You can tell people that.
All right. They'll like it. That'll be for my next book, Going There Again.
There again.
She's going there again.
Yeah. So that was me going there and telling you that.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Never mind. I don't
tell
want
me.
To. Really.
You now have you gotta to say it. Okay,
no, I knew the concept. I just didn't know the personality traits necessarily that went with the concept.
they don't always, but I all of a sudden I was reading the book and I'm like, I texted Bo and I'm like, you know, like she is really, I was like, I think I was surprised by like, you really, and I don't know why I was surprised about it, but like your sexuality really comes through in the book.
Well, you know what? My cousin, this is funny, you guys, my cousin Henry, he lives in Birmingham, Alabama. He's a lawyer. I love him. He has the deepest, like serious Southern accent. And I said, Henry, I was talking to him because my mom was his cousin. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to them about my mom's Jewishness and Judaism and sort of kind of trying to understand that period of time, why my mom was not, well, maybe secretive, but also just it didn't seem to be a big part of her life, obviously.
Yeah, it was not a point of pride.
Right. Well, I don't know. You know, he said, pride, but it's interesting, Matt, he said we were never ashamed, but it just wasn't a huge part of our identity. They were German Jews. They came over in the 1850s, I believe, and settled in the South. They were in the retail business. And I said, Henry, why do you think my mom didn't talk more about that? And, or why didn't she? He said, well, we were never, you know, we were super reformed. We were citizens first and Jews second. And he said this was a time when really people wanted to assimilate. At least he said that's what he was saying. I'd like to read more and learn more about that. But, you know, that again was another interesting aspect of the book, you know, and I think about my mom, which she like, my parents have both died. And I've been wondering, gosh, would my parents be proud of this book?
They would.
They would.
Absolutely, they would. Yes, because you come across as such a dynamic, intelligent, like accomplished person. And I think that probably comes, your questioning of that when after I asked the sexuality question probably comes from, again, this thing of like us. It's like a conservative thing that comes from somewhere else that's not within us, because what's within you is your sexuality and is all the parts of who you are. And that's what I appreciate about the book so much, is that all the parts of who you are come through in it. Because I actually think our society would be a lot more forgiving and accepting if we all would be honest about all parts of ourselves. If we
I
could.
Forgot to tell you why I brought up Henry, my cousin. He read the book and he goes, Katie, T-M-I.
No.
You've seen more sex than a policeman's flashlight.
Well, that's Birmingham, like, that's Birmingham for you.
I was like, Henry.
And a policeman's flashlight.
Isn't that funny? I guess when they're looking in cars, when
they
people are parking,
sex.
Right?
That's a lot of sex in cars.
I'd never heard that expression. It made me laugh.
That is a good one.
I just love that. The epilogue was just this letter from your father 3 years after, I think, Jay's passing.
Wasn't it so? I mean, my dad was a beautiful writer. I think you could tell in that letter. Mm-hmm. You know, I love the use of the word rectitude in that letter. Mm. That letter always makes me cry.
Yeah.
Because
made me cry.
It was so beautiful. And I think it encapsulates how loving and present and there my parents were for me my entire life. And I feel so blessed. And, you know, I really did write this for my daughters, you guys, first and foremost. You know, and I when I wrote it, I was like, some people might be interested in this. I don't know if that many people, some people who might have watched me on the Today Show may be interested in this. But I had no idea it was going to be considered that provocative. I was really surprised by that. I mean, it was provocative because it was distorted.
Right.
But I've been surprised at the level of intense feeling about it. And I'm really interested when people like you guys actually read the book.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of waiting to see how those people feel about it, because I didn't write it for these tabloid, you know, reporters who are trying to get clicks. I wrote it for thoughtful people who are kind of interested in pulling the curtain away from the news business, and who are just want to kind of think about where we are as a society and some of the changes that have happened over the last several decades.
I mean, I feel like structurally you do something really incredible in this book in terms of balancing out the Katie Couric career story and all the ups and downs. But then I think you also just really, and then I think you do uphold these consistent pillars of like dating, grief, death, cultural changes. And then I think it's pretty incredible that you end the book on Carrie finding out about her father's, you know, just a civil war, just his relationship with just a specific time.
You know, I'm very proud to say my daughters are both very intelligent and wonderful. I mean, such fine people, first of all. But Carrie really explored this and really went deep when she was at Stanford. And she did a lot of original research in Montgomery. She really kind of found out about her family tree. She interviewed the ancestors of slaves, the descendants of slaves, rather, in Eufaula, Alabama, where some of my dad's family settled early on when they came from France. And she is really extremely intellectual, and she wrote this very beautiful thesis. She won a big award for it at Stanford. I was so proud of her. I was inspired by her work to talk about that. And to, you know, Bryan Stevenson is one of my personal heroes. And I don't know, you guys have to have him. He started the Equal Justice Initiative. You probably know him. He wrote Just Mercy. He is this just incredible, incredible civil rights lawyer who I could listen to him all day. But anyway, when I did that hour for National Geographic on Confederate statues and iconography, he talked a lot about the importance of confronting and acknowledging the past, and how countries like Germany and Rwanda are so much better off because they have admitted their mistakes. They have looked at the past, and they want to make sure it doesn't happen again. They want to acknowledge it, because without that, you can't really move forward. And so I was really, you know, that's something I could have kept out. It's mortifying. Yeah. It's, you know, hugely embarrassing. Some of my family tree, as I say, was blighted with racist. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the things even someone as close as my paternal grandmother did. But I got a lot of courage from Carrie's thesis and from her curiosity and curiosity and interest in really understanding the past and squaring. You know, Jay was an incredible person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she is actually very forgiving that he was kind of into Civil War reenacting, because there was this resurgence of interest in the Civil War with Ken Burns series, Glory, Confederates in the Attics in the 90s. And I think he just thought riding horses, he loved military history. He just, I think, thought it was a fun pastime to be with people from all different walks of life. And, you know, as I say in the book, he never got to really, you know, think about more deeply about sort of what that symbolized. And it was actually, as you guys know, a much more recent recognition of all of this lost cause narrative and all of kind of the Civil War mythology that has had such a hold on our country for so long. Mm-hmm. And that happened, you know, probably in a very palpable way, 15 years after Jay died, at least.
feel like another theme in the book is this thing that you just mentioned, which is squaring people against things that they've done, interests that they've had, squaring that against the people that you know them to be, whether it's Jay, whether it's your father, whether it's, I mean, I guess your mother in that way, in terms of like the Judaism of it all. And then absolutely with
Matt
Lauer, the way you kind of sprinkle that from the beginning of the book, and then it all comes to a head in the end. And I feel like you must have come to some conclusion about like how people are. What do you think your conclusion on that is?
I think I learned, you guys, that people are complicated. They are, they're the products of their conditioning, their cultural conditioning, their environment, sort of the thinking of the time. But they're also, you know, we're all trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm really interested in understanding what makes someone the way they are.
Yeah.
You know, I'm less interested in judging someone. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in what happened to them or what created this thing that made them do what they did. I obviously can say how I feel and can criticize someone's behavior if it hurts other people. But I try, I think I could have been a good psychologist because mm-hmm. I really try to get to the root of what someone's doing in their behavior. But I guess it's that people are complicated
mm-hmm.
And that they're not all good or all bad. I think I even write about that.
Yeah.
I think in some cases it's more extreme than others, this duality that exists. But that's sort of what I would say to answer that question.
Do you, by any chance, watch The Morning Show?
I actually do. I'm mm-hmm. friendly with Juliana Margulies.
And, she's a huge part of the second season.
and I actually started watching it a few months ago, and then I stopped because I had a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I just picked it up again. And I think it's really interesting. And I think what they do really well is every character like has their stuff, right? You know, whether Chip feels like he shouldn't be back there, or I guess it's Daniel feels so marginalized,
right,
and frustrated. And clearly the Reese character, I forget her name. What's
Bradley
her name?
Jackson.
Bradley Jackson.
Unforgettable.
She's like, you know, rough around the edges and trying to figure it out. And
navigate her sexuality now. Yeah.
Yeah. And Jennifer Aniston is just, you know, trying to hold up this facade. I mean, they're all just kind of trying to figure it out. And I think they reveal their own sort of psychic wounds. And I find that really interesting.
But that has to be a little surreal to watch from your perspective. Because and this is where I guess my question lies, is the first season sort of rolls out a situation that really closely mirrors, if not directly based on, the Matt Lauer firing,
right,
and everything that went on with
think?
That. Yeah, duh. So then we have Jennifer Aniston essentially playing a stand-in for you, or like an avatar for you, or Savannah, or whoever sits next to him in that chair. So when you watch that, is it clear to you? And then does it become fun for you because you're like, oh, this is just purely fiction? Like I'm laughing while I'm drinking my glass of wine watching this? Or does any part of it make you cringe a little bit?
No, I don't think it makes me cringe because I think I was gone in 2006, and I think
right.
a lot of these issues, and you know, it's interesting because I do write a lot in the book about, I thought that was kind of powerful, that dinner I had with Matt this happened.
Right.
And
he seems nervous and like he has like
You know, the circumstances are so different. And I believe in the show, I guess I get the impression that they actually were involved in some way, sexually involved, right? The Jennifer Aniston character.
That they're now sort of...
But even in the first season, they kind of alluded to that.
It was unclear whether or not she was using that whether it was true or not against him to maintain power at the show. And now it's sort of coming out in the second season that probably it did happen several times, but it always was a gray area, like, as we've said.
Right. So obviously they take a lot of artistic license. you know, I thought they were actually very good at getting some things right. This, you know, when he comes to, I guess it was a party celebrating his anniversary or something, or a birthday party that he came in the studio, and you could see he was like beloved. Mm-hmm. And then this kind of weird other side when he's on location in Las Vegas, and, you know, how he sort of lured people in a pretty obviously gross predatory, and inappropriate. Mm-hmm. Predatory and gross and inappropriate way. So, I mean, I find it interesting. And I think with the second season, they're dealing with so many issues that I didn't really deal with when I was mm-hmm. at the Today Show.
Mm-hmm.
Issues that are very of the moment, you know, issues about diversity and the Stella character saying, you know, I'm window dressing, basically.
Right.
And I think a lot of these issues that workplaces all over the country are kind of grappling with, right? Representation and all that. And I find, I think that's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, I had to ask if you watched it, because I feel like if it were in reading the book, I felt in you describing yourself throughout, I was like, wow, I'm really similar. I felt very similar to you in a lot of ways. And so then I was thinking, like, when I asked you that question, I didn't know if you'd be like, no, I don't watch it, because I know if there was a show that purported to be about something I was like, if it was like dressing up as something I had done, I would have to watch it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've heard, I think Jennifer Aniston has said she's sort of models her character after Diane Sawyer.
I think.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know.
It seems to be an amalgam, though.
I was going to say, I think it's an amalgam. Or amalgam. Yeah. How do you say that? Amalgam.
What's amalgamation?
I know, but it is. When do you use amalgamation and when do you use amalgam? I think it's amalgam in this case.
An amalgamation of something, and then
I don't know. That's a good question. I'm going to look that up when we're done. I love words.
An amalgamation implies like an action, like the act of amalgamating.
Yeah.
And so I feel like we can use amalgam here, and I think you're mispronounced it.
No, I think a lot of people misuse amalgamation when amalgam is just fine without the Asian.
Certainly, yeah. I would be the person misusing it. So that feels right. We want to ask you what we ask every single one of our guests, which is sort of the big question of Lost Culture, which is, Katie Couric, what was the culture that made you say culture was for you?
What was the culture that... Wait.
So they didn't... So, Jarrett, you're supposed to run through this with Katie, okay?
I know you mentioned it, but I think I misunderstood.
So here's what it is. I was briefed. So here's what it is. The culture that made you say culture's for me. Like when you're growing up and you see something in pop culture, in film, television, music, it could be a surroundings thing, just the culture around you that you grew up and were raised in. What made you become the person that you are? I mean, of course, it's many different things.
You know the answer to this.
Is it Jane Pauley? No.
Earlier, come on. I'm really doing a test if you read this book.
We read the book. I just want you to say it.
Oh, Mary Tyler Moore.
You can take a nothing day and suddenly make it all seem worthwhile.
Yes, honestly, girl,
and you should know it. Yeah. With each little step and every movement you show it.
I wish we only knew the melody.
You know what's
funny? Love is all around. No need to fake it. You can have the world. Why don't you take it? You're gonna make it after all.
Iconic hat toss.
Matt, you have a nice little voice there.
Well, thank you. Likewise, we should take it on the road. That makes a lot of sense to me, and also sort of surreal how you were able to execute that.
What?
Like in terms of your career path.
Well, you know, I think, and as I write, she just, Mary Richard just made people my age, you know, remember, fellas, I'm 64, born in 1957. And, you know, women were just miraculously really entering the workforce.
Right.
Like my generation, give or take, you know, years older, and obviously years younger, but in very significant numbers. And I had a real switch with the feminist movement and women's lib, as they called it back then in the 70s, and Mary Tyler Moore, where it was like, oh, wait, everybody in my neighborhood's a stay-at-home mom, is housewife. Everybody I see on TV is pretty much, you know, a housewife.
Right. Mm-hmm,
Samantha mm-hmm. Stevens on Bewitched and, you know, shows like that. I do. And then suddenly I do remember watching Julia with Diane Carroll,
right.
Carroll, who played a single mom. And that was cool. But Mary Tyler Moore, it was like, yeah, like she got in her car and she's driving to Minneapolis. She's mm-hmm. a single woman. She didn't get married right out of college, which a lot of women older than I were doing, my mm-hmm. my sisters. And I was like, damn, I want to do that.
Right.
And isn't it meaningful that I think the first scene in the pilot episode is her like looking at an apartment, at the apartment that she moves into, just as
yeah.
this like single working gal, just like here to look at the place. Like that's not necessarily like a housewife setting, environment, situation, you know?
Right, right. I was thinking there were other shows like that. I remember like Room 222 with Karen Valentine. And I remember she was a teacher. And, you know, it's funny how much television, at least I think because I must have watched too much of it, but it's funny how it really shapes who you can be
yeah.
and mm-hmm. what the possibilities are. And I think and moves the culture. So
the representation.
Yeah. yeah.
But
yeah.
even more than that, I feel like, and this is why you must understand how important you are, is that television, I think, helps us shape the way we understand things. Sorry to use understand twice in the same sentence, but I feel like you were able to give clarity to things. I mean, you still do, but like from the beginning, it was this thing of like, well, I understand what's going on because of the way that it's being sort of communicated to me through this daytime show, evening show, syndicated talk show, whatever.
Well, you know, you have to kind of apply your own sensibilities and your own, you're a vessel really, right? You're information in, information out.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets processed and distilled and synthesized by you and obviously a lot of other people in a news organization. You know, so that's a big, huge responsibility. And you don't always get it right. You try. You try to have the values that you hope are worthy of aspiring to, right?
Yep.
And,
yeah.
And you do, you try to do the best you can and to reflect. But, you know, I talk a lot about how that prism was sometimes clouded, right? You know, the way we covered Rodney King.
Right.
That the way, you know, the way I raised that kind of missing white woman syndrome
mm-hmm.
In the book before this whole Gabby Petito, conversation
yeah.
started about, you know, why
coverage.
Right. Yeah. Why is it so much coverage? And what about so many other young women who disappear, who never, ever get really mentioned
right.
in the news media? So I'm pretty self-critical of sort of when my prism could have been sharper, and where the whole business, I think, the prism of the whole business could have been sharper.
Well, I think you're being critical of the system.
Yes.
While also being very honest and self-critical about your positioning in that system,
right?
Which is then it gets really weird and nuanced to think about the individual versus the collective sort of, you know, way of thinking about it. And I feel like you, more than a lot of people, journalists, are probably better at not apologizing. I just think you're, I think you do a better job of doing the actual soul searching that I will say the men don't do, specifically the way that Matt Lauer weeks later came back saying all of these relationships were consensual, just didn't feed, didn't seem like he was remorseful at all about the accusations. I mean,
and that he thinks of you as someone who betrayed him, and it's very telling.
Yeah,
the way that he responded to all of it.
I just think in this conversation, there is a lot of, I'll say, nuance to be like brought into, in terms of thinking about like the way everyone at these shows are positioned to, like, I don't know, like really not be sure of what their resources are. If you know, I think you ask like yourself, Ann Curry reported an incident to management because someone had approached her, a staffer had approached her with this. And then you ask yourself, I wonder why no one came to me.
And I even asked Addie, yeah. You know, I mm-hmm. asked her and I said, would you have ever come to me? And I think part of the pathology was this sort of secret nature of these relationships that was actually used to silence and manipulate people. And that was interesting too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That there's shame built in. And for her to come to you would be just would mean her fully confronting that shame in some way, to go to you as his co-anchor. I mean, I don't know. It's very interesting.
I just wanted to return to the Mary Tyler Moore thing for a second.
Yes, I'm sorry.
You must have met her many times.
I did.
Did you get to tell her that this was true in terms of her impact on you?
Yes.
She must have had so many women
many
saying
times.
That, but probably extra meaningful to hear it come from you.
Oh, listen, I felt very, very dwarfed in her presence. I mean, she's, talk about a complicated person.
Right.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You know, again, I think her son committed suicide. She, you know, I think she was just so much more layered.
Yeah.
And really, really interesting. I didn't know her well, but just from everything I read. And you, it's very easy to become an archetype, you know, especially on television.
Yeah.
Right?
As you talk about.
Very, very easy to become an archetype. And she would certainly understand that. The last time I saw her, she was quite ill and quite frail. And it made me really sad.
Yeah.
But there was something about her that was just so winsome and appealing and charming and fun to watch. But yes, I shared with her many times. And then, you know, I was thinking about it because as I was preparing for my tour, we did kind of this greatest hits reel of people. And it's just amazing, the people I've met. I mean, that to me, like for the ultimate extrovert who's very curious about the world and truly enjoys people. Like, how lucky I am
to
have had this job, you know? I was looking like, Barbara Streisand fixed my hair like she fixed Hubble's in The Way We Were.
Wow.
I got to talk to, you know, Betty White. We went to the Central Park Zoo together.
Yeah.
I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And, you know, just to be able to meet them and have fun with them and get to know them a little bit, you know, I don't really hang out with celebrities. That's not my jam. But I mean, I have a few well-known friends, but, you know, to be able to be kind of talking to these people, it's
to be in that situation.
Yeah,
in that situation
so
is
fun. And I so, you know,
I can't believe Michael Jackson asked you out.
I can't believe that either.
He did it through an intermediary, Rabbi Shmuley.
That was his way.
Rabbi Shmuley asked you as a proxy, if for people who have yet to read the book, it's out now by the release of this episode. But I mean, Rabbi Shmuley, Neil Simon, all of this.
What a Larry King? Come on now.
They're varying degrees of mortifying, though.
And I also love that you just spilled the tea about it, too. Like, I love that you called John Kasich a tool. Like, you really called these men exactly what they are. He's an asshole. You can see right through him.
I think John Kasich is probably a pretty nice guy, but you've got to admit what he did was very toolish.
Toolish. He asked you the same question twice.
He was trying to make you feel small and bad, and that's not a good guy. That's and please, you can see right through him. And then what? And with the whole 2016 of it all, where it was sort of just him and Trump, because he was the last one. If you remember, he was like sort of the last one that was not him involved in running for the GOP nomination. Like, you could kind of see, like, it was so clearly, it was almost like, dude, just it's they're going it's with over. Trump, like, get the fuck out of the way. And then when he came back, I was like, oh god.
I think Governor Kasich had a hard time reading social cues.
There you
that's
go.
That's how I would put it.
The way your voice just got.
That's a very diplomatic way of putting it.
Yeah, that's a good one.
After calling him a tool, I feel like you don't need to be too diplomatic with him.
I had just about enough of this tool. This is something I wanted to ask you, though, because a couple times I was reading the book and there are sentences like that and little.
But they're all about the men, we should say.
Right.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Bowen.
Well, yes.
That seems not to be that interesting to people, though, right?
Interesting. I wonder why.
Right, because, How many times do you read it through before it goes final print? And, like, you have to imagine that, like, when it's there and it's going out, you, as the person who's writing it, want to make sure that every word is getting it across correctly so that no one can, even though they're going to, like, interpret it in some stupid way.
Yeah. I mean, many, many, many times.
Yeah.
By that point, I was all in. I was like, hey, I'm just going to be honest. Yeah. You know, I said to my nephew, who I love, the one who was our Manny, Jeff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Is he hot? He reads us very hot on the page.
He is hot. He is
hot. Yeah, you brought up hookups. You said he had trouble bringing hookups home.
When I was did I say that? No,
well, whenever he met a hookup, it was like...
No, he was like, would you like to come back to my house, my place, and do a puzzle? Because he lived in our playroom. And he's great. He's a director. He's directing a big Netflix movie in Atlanta right now. He's adorable. He's my sister Emily's youngest son, my sister who died of pancreatic cancer. And he and I have always had this very special relationship. And I wrote him and I said, hey, you read my book. Was it like, did I go too far or anything? And he said, I loved your book so much because it was so candid. Yeah. It was one of the best books I've ever read. And I said, well, you're my nephew. Of course you're going to say that. But he said, no, that's what really makes it good. It was you being truthful and honest and putting it out there in the best way possible. So he is hot, though.
I don't know how to describe it. He just really read as hot on the page. I'm like, there's something about this Jeff. And I was thinking about him at Disneyland, like with your daughters. And I'm like, is Jeff gay too? Is he single? Because I was interested on the page.
I'll tell him, but he's straight and he's divorced. You know,
the journey's
so
long.
So if you know any really cute women.
I know not a one, none.
He's awesome though. I love Jeff.
We love Jeff too.
Katie, what are you most excited for with the tour?
You know, I think I'm just excited, and Bowen, you get to experience this with SNL. I think I'm excited to be, this sounds so cheese, and I'm kind of saying it jokingly, in Community. Who says that?
No,
but you know,
no.
I'm excited to be around, like, living, breathing people. Yeah. I'm excited to tell my story on my terms.
Yeah.
I'm excited about all the guests, really interesting, cool guests that are going to be a part of it. I love Tan France. He's going to be in Boston. I'm really excited about Chloe and Melissa are going to be in New York. Ina Garten is going to be in Atlanta.
Oh, cool.
Jen Garner is going to be in LA.
And Jen Garner.
Jen Garner.
Yeah. Love. She's so great. I mean, she's such a special person.
Yeah.
She radiates.
Yeah, doesn't she? Goodness.
She also, like, 13 Going on 30 is underrated. People need to rewatch that because
one
it's
of the
a tour de force
of all time.
It's a tour de force.
And in fact, I was telling Adriana, who works with me, that we've got to do a clip of her doing the Thriller dance.
100%.
Right?
She did it
right.
better than she did it With better Paul than Rudd. Your ex-boyfriend,
yeah.
Michael.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And Chance the Rapper.
Chance the Rapper in Chicago.
Which is what so fun.
That is awesome.
And Nashville, Brad Paisley, who I just saw last night at the Michael J. Fox Foundation.
Another
and
hunk.
His beautiful wife, Kim.
Kimberly.
And they're incredible people. Wow. You know, I need to listen to more country music. Brad Paisley, he is such a talent, you guys.
He's really good.
I mean, he's amazing. And I mean, just watching him play the guitar, and he did something, the Marshall Tucker Band, Can't You See? He just kind of did it because someone said they were going to donate $50,000 to the Michael J. Fox Foundation if he played this song. He had never played it before, and he just like crushed it.
Some people
like,
got
can
it.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine being
able
to
play
do that?
You taught yourself to play piano by ear, which is another thing that I really loved.
Well, you don't really. Yeah, I mean, I used to just sit down. I took piano for 10 years, but I play just by ear everything in the key of C. Yeah, like Irving Berlin. I haven't played lately, but Brad, I mean, Brad Paisley, wouldn't it be, if you had a superpower, you guys, what would it be?
I mean, that sounds pretty good. Learning a song within what, like 5 minutes?
Yeah, I think he just kind of like, I don't know how he did it. I got to talk to him when I'm in Nashville. But I wish I could just sing, like be like really, really. Wouldn't that be cool to have just an incredible voice like Kristen Chenoweth or something?
Mm. Ask Matt. Matt's got a pretty good one. As you pointed out earlier.
Yeah, I could tell. Matt, do you do any? I mean, did you ever want to be a singer?
I sort of am one. I'm actually, by the way, for the readers, thank you, because the tour did sell out. So have you heard
Matt's
of Christmas?
On tour as well.
I'm going all around the country.
Oh my gosh.
All 11 of my dates sold out, you guys. So
that's
thank
so
you so
exciting.
Much for,
well,
for
tell
buying
me about
tickets
it.
To it.
I should have known this, I guess.
So it's sort of an ironic original Christmas album that I wrote when I was about 4 years ago. I saw Mariah Carey and she was... she's the queen of Christmas. She had something to do every year. And I was like, I want a comedy version of that. And so I wrote with my musical director, Henry, we did an entire original Christmas album.
Every song is fantastic.
And
we do it every year. So, and we're
where are you performing in New York, Matt?
Joe's Pub. I would love to comp you to it.
When is it? I can buy a ticket, Matt. When is
it?
It's
sold out, but it's December 19th and 20th at Joe's Pub, and then we're doing the Bell House in Brooklyn. But Katie Couric, if you want to come.
But Katie Couric can come.
that's so exciting. Well,
yeah,
congratulations.
No, thank you. It's a blast. I think if I could have a superpower, it sounds crazy, but honestly, I think I was a little emo after reading your book, but I think I would want to... just have me and everyone I love live forever, honestly.
Yeah.
I literally, but then I also was very touched by something that your mom said, which I think she probably said as a joke, but it actually made me feel better, which was, well, you know, if we all live forever, or get pretty crowded down here. It kind of reminds you of like that's part of life. And, you know,
right.
It was sort of like a nice way to put it. And I also, you know, not to get too serious, but you know, I just went on a family vacation and I got back from it and I had such a great time. And then in reading your book, when you talked about like not wasting those moments and how, you know, if you had a regret, it was like lingering over coffee with your producer that one time so that you didn't spend those like extra minutes with your mother. And I just thought that was such a great illustration and really powerful. And I think the book is so great for so many reasons. And I think you really do get to know you better. And I think it also... you know, does dive into a lot of tough topics because you, in being who you are, like have been through so many of these things that are now cultural topics for us. But I also think the book is also a reminder, and it's a reminder that not everyone, that no one is going to be here forever, that we're not going to be here forever. And I really wanted to say thank you for that because it's, I think a lot of people are going to get a lot from it.
Oh, thanks, Matt.
I know I did. I had to
Thank
put it down
you.
A couple times and just take a lap.
Yeah.
You write beautifully, 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 beautifully.
Mm.
with that, let's move on to I Don't Think So, Honey.
The rollicking 60-second segment that the podcast is famous for. You know, Katie, the podcast has received critical acclaim.
I know it has. I know, that's why I reached out and requested that I be on it.
Well, I'm so happy that three prestige
figures. You guys are so nice and you're very fun to talk to because you're thoughtful, right? It's hard to have a conversation with people if they're not kind of interested, because that's what makes people interesting, and that they don't think about things, right? So this has been really fun for me.
It's been fun for us.
This is a show that's all about just interest in general.
Yeah.
Just we ask people what they were interested in, what they're interested in now. And I that's a beautiful way of putting it. Is that an expression that makes people interesting? Is
no,
to be interested?
That's you can quote me on that.
Oh, it's a rule of culture is what it is.
That's an original observation by moi.
Bowen,
what rule of culture is?
Maybe that'll make it like quotes about people or, you know, interests. And then when you Google it, it'll be like, interested people make interesting people.
That's actually title of app.
Title of app. Title of episode.
I love to find the title of app.
Matt, it's rule of culture number one.
Interested people make for interesting people. There we go.
Just got to lock it in by saying it at the same time. Okay, this is our 1 minute segment where we take 1 minute to rail against something in culture, and we'll go in the usual order, which is Matt first.
See, I was so fixated on the guest and the guest book that I didn't actually have one. But then in the beginning of the episode, I came up with one again because I'm going to return to it because I don't think so, honey.
Okay, here we go. I'm so excited. This is Matt Rogers. I Don't Think So, Honey. His time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey. This thing of Meghan McCain on Watch What Happens Live. Why does she have an SNL Letterman's jacket? It's like she's in like the Nine Times Club at this goddamn show. And you're going to have the gall, bookers. I'm not talking to you, Andy. I don't think that you're responsible for the booking. But on a Wednesday night, on the second episode of the Beverly Hills Housewives reunion, where we dive into the cultural topic of the year, Erica Jane and her divorce, and you're going to have Meghan McCain and God knows whoever S.E. Cup is, who never has a goddamn thing to say, to get it waxed poetic about the Housewives. I don't care what they say. And then they have the gall to go in on my girl, Katie Couric, and say they hate the book. You better go fuck yourself. Seconds. And I think it's really funny that you're like, we support women, when the number one talking point about your book, Meghan McCain, is how awful everyone at The View is. Give me a fucking break. You couldn't help to keep talking about this. And of course, no one can tell their truth but you. Get lost. I don't think
and
so,
honey. And that's 1 minute. She really threw SNL under the bus too in that, and in some interview.
She's pathetic.
She said, you know, she's like, it's that thing when SNL sketches become real life that people started to think that I was entitled. I was like, no, it didn't take an SNL sketch to make you that.
Well, it's like what Katie said about Sarah Palin. All she's got to do is talk. Just let her talk and you'll see exactly how entitled she is. And I, you know, it's been kind of inescapable, like, the media thing with her too right now, because, you know, she's out there also hawking her book.
I'm escaping it. I found the hatch. I'm gone. I'm not really paying attention.
I wish I could find the hatch easier, because she really was like sort of like a media firestorm there for a few days when she was like, The View was a toxic work environment. Yeah, like, fucking get an original soundbite, first of all. And another thing is just like, she really, like, with the SNL of it all, like, the day after that happened, she was, like, highest honor in all the land.
Exactly. She was so fucking chipper about it.
She just thrives off the negativity and thrives off the victim narrative. And for her to think that she is the victim and in her life is just pathetic. And I really, really, really resented her talking about your book the way that she did, especially after reading the book, because of how much...
What a flattened assessment of it, too.
Hated it, and I can't believe she's on Watch What Happens Live more than Andy Cohen.
Anyway.
And our guest agrees.
Our guest just is silently gesturing.
I'm listening, but...
She's choosing joy right now.
She's choosing joy, as her hoodie says. Her hoodie says, choose joy, and that is the right choice.
Bowen, I don't think I have a thing to rag about. Is that bad? Can you guys excuse me from this exercise? Would you get mad?
You don't have to. Here's the thing. You don't have to do anything you don't want to do. but I think it'll be good. And while Bowen is doing his, maybe think
I think
about
I've bitched enough actually in this podcast, right?
Come on.
If you would do us the honor of listening to mine is going to be,
of course,
mine is going to be pretty ribald and
ribald.
Kind of ribald. See, two words already. Two words in the episode of Katie,
you know, I had to look up a couple words because I knew inherently what they were, but I wanted to be sure. I had to look up pugilistic.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Aggressive.
Yeah, I like
and
that.
I
word.
Thought
yeah.
that was a beautiful combative. Illustration of what Bill O'Reilly is.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I knew what bon vivant was, but I was just curious about what the definition of it was. And then it was confirmed for me and I loved it. And
you are bon vivant. You someone who lives with gusto and who loves
right.
loves life.
I just love that bon vivant. And I gravitate towards that.
I'm actually looking up ribald to make sure that I shouldn't.
I'm
have.
Sure you're right.
No,
I
no,
trust
no.
you.
I'm looking. It.
There was Let's another see. One too.
I might beat you to it.
I don't know.
Okay, Google is saying ribald, but
I know.
I will adopt your ribald. Pronunciation.
Hey. But I think the second definition is with a long I.
Hmm.
So I think either's acceptable. So I'd like to apologize, Bowen, for correcting ribald, which sounds like dribble. That's why ribald sounds a little better to me. Will you find out, Adriana?
I think ribald is certainly the more pleasing thing
ribald
to hear.
Seems more correct.
But maybe that's the British pronunciation. I'm not sure.
I was
We're
also
find
shit
out.
At math and turned to words as well.
Yeah.
I was horrible. If I never met a number I liked, never met a word I didn't love.
There you go.
There you go.
You are my people.
Exactly. I felt. You know what my favorite word was when I was little? Nonchalant.
Nonchalant. That's a good word. I like it. Very French. The mm-hmm. other word that people use incorrectly all the time is...
Nonplussed.
Nonplussed. Yes. Yep.
I knew you were going to say that.
Why did you know that? How did you know that?
I actually knew too. It was because it's like one of those weird ones.
It's one of those weird ones. It the definition is different than what it sounds as if
yes.
it were. Yeah.
Nonplussed yes. means you're angry.
Means
yeah.
you're
fear.
It means you're very stirred and shaken.
Agitated, I think.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yes. And nonplussed, like when people, it sounds like they should be like, I don't know, I'm kind of nonplussed
about it. People think it means you're unfazed, but that's not correct,
that's
people.
That's not it. This can be your, I don't think so, honey, Katie. Okay, but I can go really quickly on mine. And then
I don't think so, honey, but it might not be as long as
that's
1
fine.
Minute.
Yeah, as
that's
long
fine.
As you,
that's fine.
You, here's the thing. Remember when I said you don't have to do it? You actually do.
You do.
It's part of the briefing. It's part of the contract. And this whole thing is a verbal contract.
Okay.
Which are binding. I'm sorry, but they're binding. All right. So Bowen Yang, first you. And you have to do one. You are we're gonna get into a big fight, my sister.
Okay.
And this is not like the Today Show. Me and you are a real family. Okay?
Okay.
So listen, Bowen Yang, this is your I don't think so, honey.
Yes.
Bowen Yang's time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. The marketing behind Dude Wipes. For those who are unfamiliar, these are flushable wipes for men, quote unquote, when we all know that it is actually being purchased by queer men, gay men, anyone who engages in anal sex.
This is true.
Okay? This
sitting,
is for people.
It's sitting on my bathroom right now.
There's no such thing as a cishet man who is using these to keep a clean butt.
100%.
They're going to go for the tushy. They're going to go for the bidet.
30 seconds.
I don't have such plumbing in my apartment. I just don't want to think about that. So I'm just relying on the Dude Wipes, which not environmentally conscious of me, I know, but I just something really gets to me about the way these are marketed, as if they're marketed to like a fraternity brother, when I know for a fact that it is only the bottoms in the world like myself who are using it to actually feel like they can walk into a sexual situation with some confidence and not any self-consciousness about
their
hygiene. So I need the marketing around Dude Wipes to change. Just call them something with the F word, the other F word. That's 1 minute.
They're not going to be called fag wipes, okay?
I want them to be called fag wipes.
And draw the line. Katie, you don't have to worry about this because you're a woman and a top. But the thing is, there are these flushable wipes that we need to sort of keep the area okay. And so that's what Bowen is. I don't think so. And honeying that the fact that they're calling them dude wipes as if
why,
a straight man.
Why don't they just call them wipes? Why do they have to be male wipes?
Exactly.
Because doesn't
like
everyone...
when they're like the lady pen, like the pink pen, the Bic for women or whatever. It's just stupid. It's a marketing.
Degender everything.
Who makes these? Who makes dude wipes?
I don't know. Well, there's Pure for Men, which is a company that sells fiber supplements.
I can't believe this.
And they also make their own line of flushable wipes. And I used to buy them, but it's more convenient. They ship faster if I buy the dude wipes.
Oh,
and
okay.
So I've been buying the dude wipes.
I follow this Instagram page, which is like men of soccer. And it's like, you know, it's like they have the most amazing asses in the world. And so I'm sometimes scrolling and I'm looking at them and I'm like, yeah, but let's not pretend that's like, you can't even like really get excited about anything here because straight men's butts are the most disgusting thing in the world. They don't take
the
care
ultimate
of them.
Swamp ass. The ultimate
that's
swamp
what
ass.
I'm saying. Like swamp ass. I mean, come on. This is like the central.
Okay, anyway. I think it's time for for Katie's. I don't
not,
think so, honey.
Do not let Katie respond to this. Like,
no,
let her do it in her own book.
She's not. Follow up.
Yeah, you thought you went there? No, then you came to Lost College and we were going there.
All right.
It's time. And then we'll let you go.
Okay, good. Because I got to go, guys. I love you, but don't you have stuff to do?
We have stuff to do, too.
Drag
okay.
us.
Okay, sorry. Okay. What do I say, honey?
I don't think so, honey.
Okay. And then the name of the thing, you're I don't think so, honey. All right, Bowen, put her on the clock.
This is Katie Couric's I Don't Think So, Honey. I can't believe I'm saying this. And her time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. I think you need to be able to use a few sentences without saying like. Can't you speak English? Didn't you? I mean, come
you're talking to
on,
us?
People. No, not you guys.
We do it all the time.
Not you guys. I don't know. Maybe it's something for this younger generation.
Yeah.
But you guys, just pause. Because if you are thinking about something, don't use like as a crutch. I used to use, you know, as a crutch. But now every person, highly educated individuals, I want to say they sometimes use like 45 times in a 1 minute conversation.
15
I can't
seconds.
Deal with it. Stop it. Listen to yourself. Record yourself. Count your likes and get rid of them, people. Love, now, Katie.
Now say,
and that's 1 minute.
Say, I don't think so, honey. One more time.
I don't think so, honey.
There you go. And now you know what's going to happen.
Wait,
what?
I don't like. Think so, like, honey.
No,
that's not how it goes. It goes, I don't think so, honey.
Yes, it does. And you did a perfect toss of the wrist and the neck as well. Can I say, I'm going to listen back to this now and turn
to count
Sam
my likes
when I realize how many times I've said like, because that just didn't pop in your head.
I don't think you guys did it. No, it, no.
I know
it
actually, we did.
And even my daughter, who is so smart.
No.
She sometimes falls back on the like thing. And I want to say, hey, don't say like so much. But then she'll get mad at me.
I have a question. Have you liberated yourself from you know as a filler word?
For the most part, I have.
How did you do that?
I don't know. I think I just got older and smarter.
There you go.
So with time, yeah, we'll lose the cultural colloquialism that is like...
My new crutch is kind of.
That's not bad.
And kind of, honestly, and sometimes at the end of a sentence, you know?
Mm-hmm. You know?
I need affirmation.
You know?
A lot of my transitions, I whenever I listen back to this for edits, a lot of my, like... See, I just...
There you go.
A lot of the things I say to transition into sentences are the same thing. And the readers of
that's
the podcast
okay.
know what I'm talking about, and I refuse to say it now. But it is. Okay. It's interesting. And, Janine Garofalo did the same, I don't think so, honey.
She did?
She did.
I love her.
You guys have that in common. We love her, too.
Yeah.
Wow. What a wonderful episode. Katie, thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you all for having me. I really appreciated the conversation. And, I would be friends with both of you if we could.
We're
be
all
friends.
Friends. You're coming to my
We're
show.
We're all friends.
Okay.
We'll see each other at
I am coming to the show.
I'm gonna reach out to everybody.
Okay. And
do
and
you run
Bowen,
your do you really run your social media? Is that you
I have
Katie Couric Media?
But I do a lot of it, but I do have help. My My social media person is Julia Lewis. She does a lot of it. Adriana Fazio, who works with me and really helped me write this book. She did her senior thesis on me at Notre Dame and interviewed me for her thesis. She and during the interview, we were talking, and she grew up watching the Today Show, and she was writing about the changing perceptions of femininity and morning television and broadcast journalism. And so when she was interviewing me, I said, Adriana, you know so much about me. Do you want to help me work on this book?
Wow.
And so she came to work with me after she graduated from Notre Dame. And it's, she's been great. And she's sort of my right-hand person. And I want to mention Lucy Kalin. She was the former editor of O Magazine. Lucy helped me tremendously. If you saw in the acknowledgments, I don't think you have them.
We don't have them. I think
you guys have the ARCs. I don't know if Matt, you have the hardcover.
I have the PDF.
So you have the acknowledgments.
Yeah, I read the whole thing.
So Lucy is an amazing, amazing person. She is an amazing writer. So she was incredibly helpful. And I couldn't have done it without Lucy and Adriana by my side. And, you know, what's really nice, you guys, we worked on this for 3 years, and we all really love each other and care about each other. And it was obviously an incredible bonding experience. But
absolutely.
I feel very close and grateful to both of them.
Well, we thank them. We love everybody at KCM.
Yeah.
Media.
Love
the tell
crew.
Your listeners to sign up for my newsletter if they can. Wake up call.
Sign up, readers.
Sign up. You get a newsletter, and you get like Katie's recommendations, picks. Like, it's like music you're listening to.
We interview a lot of interesting people. We try to break down the news of the day and give you information you need, and also tell your listeners that we would love to see them in any of the cities I'm visiting, starting October 28th in Boston.
Okay.
Boston, New York, San Francisco, LA, Nashville, Atlanta, Dallas.
Oh my God.
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia.
Yes, Philadelphia.
Savannah Guthrie's joining me in Philadelphia.
Oh, that's great.
Perfect. Perfect.
Well, the book is going there. It's out now. It's incredible. And it's written by our amazing guest, Katie Couric. Thank you so, so much for being here.
Love you guys. Thank you.
Love you back. And we end every episode with a song. And it's a short one. And it's the end of the Mary Tyler Moore theme song. Here we go, Bo.
You're gonna make it after all.
One more time.
You're gonna make it after all.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yes.
Hats off. Bye.
Bye.